and welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Friday, May 15th, with additional stories from Saturday, May 16th. Part of the team. Through one vision, Toma finds success at local convenience store. Karen Toma was a bit nervous when she first started working at Tobacco Outlet Plus Grocery, 201 North 15th Street, according to her job coach, Melina Claus. At first, she was nervous, so it took a little encouragement to let her know to talk with the employees, Claus said. Toma of Fort Dodge is a client of One Vision Community Employment Services. With the help of One Vision, Toma began working at the store almost 2 years ago. Once Toma started talking, Claus said it didn't take long for her to become a favorite of the employees and customers who visit the store. I love the employees, Toma said. They have always been willing to help me out. David always has a smile on his face. David Munoz is the store leader. She's a hard worker, Munoz said. She gets a lot done in a short amount of time. Karen is an important part of the team. Toma usually begins her shift at 9 a.m. and ends around noon. She stocks the shelves, fills the fresh case, sandwiches, meats, and fruits, takes trash out, and helps with sanitization. All of those things are important jobs, Munoz said. And Toma has a great attitude, Claus said. I love Karen's positive attitude, Claus said. She's determined to do the best she can at work. And it doesn't hurt that Toma sometimes brings in treats to share. She brings baked goods for birthdays and other events, Munoz said. I make brownies, cake, cookies, Toma said, sometimes homemade stuff. Toma has appreciated getting to know the employees. Everyone welcomes me and I like welcoming the customers, Toma said. Claus has been coaching Toma along the way. She's glad to see me when I come in, and I am glad to see her, Claus said. Sometimes she will help Toma break down boxes or find products. But Claus said, oftentimes Toma doesn't need much help. I am here if she needs me, Claus said. If she doesn't need me, that's great too. Claus usually coaches Toma for about an hour of her shift. She used to stay with her for the entire shift. Her coaching supports have decreased, Claus said, as they should. She's done a great job. Toma received high marks from store management on her last performance review. David gave me a really good performance review, Toma said. But Munoz said it wasn't something that he did. That was something you earned, Munoz said. Appellate court affirms child endangerment conviction, remands court fines for adjustment. The Iowa Court of Appeals has affirmed the October 2018 conviction of a Fort Dodge daycare employee who strangled a four-year-old. The restitution ordered in Shanna Dessinger's November 2018 sentencing, totaling $843, is the only thing that will be considered in light of a subsequent 2019 Iowa Supreme Court ruling that found court costs can only be ordered against those who have a reasonable ability to pay. Dessinger's child endangerment conviction, an aggravated misdemeanor, and 11-month suspended jail sentence were affirmed by the court's decision published Wednesday. The Fort Dodge woman served 30 days in county jail over the course of 4 months, followed by a year of informal probation. Then District Associate Judge Angela Doyle cited Dessinger's complete lack of remorse and responsibility as part of the reasoning for the sentence. The convicted defendant denied any wrongdoing and contended that the child was struggling to get an apron off while cleaning up after playtime. She said that in trying to help him, she stumbled but did not squeeze his neck. Another daycare worker witnessed Dessinger strangle the four-year-old during the May 2018 incident. Dessinger, 40, filed her appeal on grounds that hearsay from the child was improperly admitted, her rights to confront her accuser were violated, her attorneys were ineffective, and the court failed to make an ability to pay determination before imposing court costs. The appellate court only upheld the last assertion. I'm glad we were able to get justice for this innocent child and his family, said Webster County Attorney Darren Driscoll. There should be zero tolerance for child abuse, and this case was especially disturbing in that the abuser was an employee of the daycare facility responsible for protecting the four-year-old child in her care. Pediatrics nurse recognized with DAISY Award. A Fort Dodge nurse recently received an award honoring her passion and dedication to her patients. Becky Youngenger, a nurse on the pediatrics and nursery floors at Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center, was presented with the DAISY Award during a small ceremony at the hospital last week. The Daisy Award for Extraordinary Nurses is given by the Daisy Foundation, which was started in 2000 to recognize nurses who go above and beyond for their patients. DAISY stands for Diseases Attacking the Immune System, and the foundation operates in memory of Patrick Burns, whose family wanted a way to thank nurses for the excellent care he received in the last weeks of his life. Patients and their families nominate nurses for the award. Becky helped me understand my condition and my treatment plan, read the nomination written by Younginger's patient, who was not identified. She went above and beyond to help me and my girlfriend be comfortable throughout my stay. Younginger received an award certificate as well as a lapel pin and a statue that signifies the wonderful relationships between nurses and patients. Younginger has been a nurse for 17 years, spending all that time in pediatrics and the nursery at TRMC. Her choice to go into nursing was an easy one. "I just always kind of had that in mind since I was a little kid," she said. "There was never any question when I was in school." Younginger said she was surprised when she was presented with the Daisy Award while working last week and didn't know ahead of time that she would be receiving the recognition. "It was very surprising," she said. "It's an honor. I really love what I do, so it was nice to be recognized for that." Nurse Sean Nimke, supervisor for both the birth center and pediatrics at TRMC, has worked with Younginger since Younginger started working at the hospital. "Becky is amazing at what she does," Nimke said. "She is excellent with patients and their parents. Parents and patients often comment on how much time Younginger spends with them, making sure they understand their plan of care or their disease process," she continued. "She takes extra time with her patients, and they are always in excellent hands when she is around," Nimke said. "I am so thankful that Becky is a part of our team. She is not only a great nurse, but she is an amazing person." Younginger loves the opportunity to make a difference in people's lives every single day. In peds, they come in terrified and unsure of what's going on, so you get to do lots of education, she said. And in the nursery, you get to be a part of the biggest event of their life, so that's pretty cool. Younginger joins hundreds of nurses worldwide who have been part of the Daisy Award legacy over the past 20 years, including many others at Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center. "It's something I'm really proud of," she said. "The whole idea behind the Daisy Award is good, strong patient care and being compassionate. I try to center my care around that. Those are some of the values that are really important to me, so I'm pretty proud of that." Feenstra touts conservative record in legislature. He seeks Republican nomination for Congress. Editor's note. In the first of a series of articles introducing candidates on the June 2nd primary election ballots, State Senator Randy Feenstra, Republican from Hull, answers some questions from The Messenger. Feenstra is seeking the Republican nomination in the 4th Congressional District, which includes Webster County and all of its surrounding counties. He faces U.S. Representative Steve King, Stephen Reeder, Brett Richards, and Jeremy Taylor in the race for the Republican nomination. Whoever wins the Republican nomination will face Democrat J.D. Scholten in the November general election. Question: what is your previous political experience? Answer: I'm an Iowa State Senator with a proven record of delivering conservative results for Iowa. Question: what is your profession? Answer: I'm a business teacher at Dort University, Sioux Center. Question: what is your educational background? Answer: I received a bachelor's degree from Dort University and a master's degree from Iowa State University in Ames. Question: why should the voters pick you? Answer: for me, this election is all about results. In the Iowa Senate, I have a proven record of delivering conservative results for Iowa. In the Iowa Senate, I supported efforts to defund Planned Parenthood, ban sanctuary cities, expand our Second Amendment rights, and I authored the largest tax cut in Iowa history. Now, more than ever, President Trump needs effective conservatives in Congress who will work with him to pass his agenda. Question: in your opinion, what is the number one issue facing the nation, and what would you seek to do about it if elected? Answer: as a Christian and a father, the most important issue will always be protecting innocent life. In the Iowa Senate, we ended taxpayer funding for abortion and defunded Planned Parenthood. I'll work with President Trump to protect and promote a culture of life in America. Question: what would you recommend to rejuvenate the economy? Answer: As the author of the largest tax cut in Iowa history, the most important thing we can do is keep the government off the backs and out of the pockets of our families, farmers, and small businesses. I'll work with President Trump to protect his tax cuts and build on the progress we've made in reducing the tax burden for Iowans. Question: what would you do to bring jobs to rural Iowa? Answer: in the Iowa Senate, I supported property tax caps, income tax cuts, and tax incentives for new farmers. These measures will help promote opportunities in rural Iowa. In Congress, I'll work to continue reforming, simplifying, and reducing the tax code and the tax burden while promoting trade deals that put Iowa farmers first. I'll also be a strong proponent of renewable fuels that are essential to our rural economy. Question: what changes in the healthcare system, if any, would you recommend in response to the coronavirus pandemic? Answer: first, I would repeal Obamacare and defund Planned Parenthood. I would also work to promote market-based solutions that allow insurance to be purchased across state lines and promote price transparency for all healthcare products. Shining a light on hospital workers, Don Lambert. Don Lambert lives near Harcourt. What's your job at Unity Point Trinity Regional Medical Center? Cook. How long have you worked at the hospital? 39 years. What's the toughest part about your job? Learning all the different menu changes and procedures throughout the years. What's an interesting fact or two someone might not know about you? I make my own cards. How has the COVID-19 pandemic changed what you do on a daily basis? Having to wear a mask all the time, especially around the grill, makes things harder. If you could have dinner with someone famous, who would it be? She's not famous, but she's my grandma, who died young, so I didn't get to know her. My family always talk about her. She sounded like she was an awesome lady. What's the best part of your day? Going home, knowing you got everything done for the day. City Hall reopening to public Monday. After several weeks of closure, the Fort Dodge Municipal Building will begin reopening some departments to the general public on Monday. Hours will resume as 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday to allow for additional cleaning at the end of each day as part of an ongoing effort to keep staff and visitors safe, the city said in a press release Friday. A few restrictions will be in place as City Hall reopens. City Hall will be open to billing department walk-in traffic only. All other visitors will need to schedule an appointment with the appropriate staff member. The second floor and all offices remain closed to the public. The city asks that visitors refrain from bringing unnecessary parties, including children, whenever possible. All visitors will use the main doors on First Avenue South to enter and exit the building. Those needing an ADA accessible entrance and those with appointments can use the east door. The city asks all visitors to observe proper social distancing at all times. That means only 9 visitors will be allowed in City Hall at a time, and those inside must stand on their mark 6 feet apart from the next person in line. Those with scheduled appointments will meet with staff in the City Council's chambers. To enter, use the accessible entrance on South 9th Street. The city asks that all visitors not enter the hall if they are experiencing a fever of 100 degrees or higher, chronic coughing or sneezing, shortness of breath, or any other flu-like symptoms. The city continues to encourage residents to do as much business as possible online or through drop boxes. For questions or concerns, call 515-576-4551. Welcome to Gypsum City. An eye-catching wall of brick adorned with carbon steel mining carts recently found its home welcoming visitors to Gypsum City Off-Highway Vehicle Park, 2390 Mill Road. The wall and sign project got started in the fall, but with weather delays was mostly completed over the past few weeks, said Matt Cosgrove, Webster County Conservation Director. We've still got some exterior accent lighting that we'll put on the sign, which will wrap up the project here in the next couple weeks, he said. The project used 3 Fort Dodge businesses for design, construction, fabrication, and installation. Griffin's Landscaping designed the wall using Rosetta outcropping stones, and Crimmins Welding and Fabrication made the letters of the sign and the mining carts out of carbon steel, which will eventually turn a rust color to match the Webster County trail signs. The final part of this installation, the lighting, will be completed by Bemrich Electric and Telephone over the next few weeks. The $100,000 project was funded through the Iowa Department of Natural Resources ATV registration grant. When people register their machines to ride in the park, the seven parks in Iowa compete for that money every year for development and operations and maintenance, Cosgrove said. Last year, we were awarded the money for that sign project. Every year, we write a grant for the operations, maintenance, and development for that park, and that's really how it's been built over the years. The project is more than just the wall by the highway. It will include another sign closer to the park's entrance, which has yet to be installed. Gypsum City is Iowa's largest OHV park, and we wanted it to have a sign that looks like it's actually a destination. So that's the reason for the signs and the costs, Cosgrove said, to show it off as a major attraction and destination for Webster County and the Fort Dodge area. Cosgrove said that when planning the wall and sign, it was important to honor the mining history of the area, which is why the four steel mining carts sit atop the wall. The park was developed on former mining property, he said. Cosgrove believes the new welcoming signs truly make Gypsum City look like a destination rather than just any ordinary park. People now realize they have arrived at the park, when before it was pretty uneventful. If you didn't know what it was there, you didn't know, he said. This, at least, I think, makes it pop. Dressing for Success in Manson. T-shirt fundraiser, Make Manson Great Again, contributes to Manson Grocery Store. Manson Mayor Dave Anderson wasn't sure how he felt to have his likeness recognized as something iconic when it was selected to adorn a new pair of T-shirts available at State of the Art, a sign shop in Manson. I'm honored people would even buy them, I guess, he said, settling on the word humbled as a good descriptor of his feelings. But since it's for a good cause, he could learn to get over the feeling of his trademark silhouette, an unbuttoned blue plaid flannel shirt wavering over unassuming blue jeans, being on everyone's chest all over town. The T-shirt's back reads, Make Manson Great Again. The new T-shirts, created by Ashley Sturgis, with over 30 sold at last count, donated $15 apiece to the effort to revive the town's now-closed grocery store. And as the town continues its fight to bring back the most basic of institutions, they're looking to bring in every dollar they can to make Manson at least a place where groceries can be bought again. The town's last store closed in November. There's definitely something missing on Main Street that we need to get back, Sturgis said. Manson does feel different without the grocery store. After moving back to her hometown from Sioux City, she wanted to do her part to help. Turns out, doing her part, making designs that sell, was the thing she had been doing for 30 years. With $185,000 raised so far, Anderson said the town is only $15,000 shy of its goal. By early March, the effort had gathered $170,000. We're willing to take more. We don't have to stop there, he reminds donors. That's our bottom number. That $200,000 budget has very little wiggle room as the board works through the process of legalities in acquiring the building and fixing it up. The mayor estimated that fundraising will continue through the rest of the year. Roofing repairs, cement repairs, door openers, equipment repairs, and a new point of sale system are just a few items on the long list that need to be addressed to get the joint back up to speed. Rough blueprints reveal that plans are in place to strip flooring, rearrange shelving, and paint the store to give it a whole new look. Though the groceries board initially aimed to be open in the last quarter of this year, difficulties posed by COVID-19 have delayed the efforts. Still, he said the store could feasibly be opened around the start of the new year. In a way, Anderson said the coronavirus has helped locals realize just how much they appreciate having a local store. Even though the fundraising has taken time, he said there's still no doubt that the local buy-in is there. People will support a store that's run properly, he said. A well-run hometown grocery store will find its niche very easily. Manson soon hopes to add the grocery store to its respectable array of other retail, business, and restaurant establishments. The new store continues in its plans to be a nonprofit model to leave the possibility of applying for grants open. If you'd like to contribute to the effort to make grocery shopping a reality again in Manson, checks payable to Manson Grocery can be dropped off at either bank in Manson. Heartland Bank at 1314 First Avenue, or Manson State Bank at 1001 Main Street. Donations of any amount are welcomed. All donations kept confidential will be held in a pass-through bank account until Manson Grocery reaches its goal. Once the goal of $200,000 has been reached, Manson Grocery's Board of Directors will deposit checks into a new account under an agreed-upon store name. Webster County COVID-19 cases now 13. Webster County Public Health confirmed another positive case of COVID-19 on Thursday afternoon, bringing the county total to 13 cases. The age range of the individual was not available by press time. According to WCPH, 6 of the county's positive cases have recovered since their diagnosis, while 1 has died. A total of 959 people have been tested for COVID-19 in Webster County, about 2.67% of the county's population, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. On Thursday, the Iowa Department of Public Health announced 386 new positive cases of COVID-19. Since the pandemic began, 13,675 people have tested positive in Iowa. 12 additional deaths were also reported Thursday, bringing the statewide total to 318. Shining a light on hospital workers, Katie Johnson. Editor's note, in honor of National Hospitals Week, the Messenger is delighted to feature 7 people who work at our local hospital, Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center. One person will be featured a day over the course of 7 issues of the Messenger. Each one of these people hold important positions at the hospital that may not always be recognized. We hope you enjoy getting to know them. Katie Johnson from outside of Duncombe. What's your job at Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center? First shift lead tech in environmental services. How long have you worked at the hospital? I started in January 2013 and I've been in EVS the whole time. What's the toughest part about your job? Right now, I'm getting used to how things are on first shift as opposed to nights. It's a faster pace and the routes are different. I'm also learning more of the laundry side of things. What's an interesting fact or two people might not know about you? I collect and customize resin ball jointed dolls, which really creeps out my niece. How has the COVID-19 pandemic changed what you do on a daily basis? Other than keeping up with the guidelines to cleaning here at work, the biggest impact is not seeing my family and friends. We used to get together on Sundays for dinner and tabletop games, and we haven't been able to do that. If you could have dinner with someone famous, who would it be? I'd love to go back in time and have a fancy dinner with Vincent Price. What's the best part of your day? As far as when I'm working, I actually really enjoy counting linen in the back of laundry. It's kind of a nice wind down from all of the running around during the day. Otherwise, it's when I go home and I'm met at the door by a very excited dog with a squeaky toy, and we go out for our walk. News brief. Lane closure announced on 20th Avenue North. Weather permitting, beginning Monday, traffic on 20th Avenue North in front of 1536 20th Avenue North, Bickford Senior Living, will be reduced to 1 lane until work is completed for concrete patching repairs. Residents of Orchard Glen will be allowed to enter and exit at their convenience, but will need to use caution while work is in progress. Detours will be in place. Motorists are urged to reduce speed and use caution in the area. An editorial. COVID-19 lockdown cannot continue. U.S. economy must be carefully restarted. If you are among those who have not lost their jobs because of the COVID-19 epidemic, congratulations. Perhaps you share the widespread opinion that the current lockdown of the economy should continue to keep everyone safe. How would you like the government to collect your share? That is, your share of what it will take to support those laid off or perhaps fired altogether in order to keep many American businesses closed. We'll do the math for you. About 30 million people in our country have lost their jobs because of COVID-19. That leaves about 133 million working. For them to pay their laid off neighbors even at a minimum wage rate, each working person will have to chip in about $3,400 a year. That is at the federal minimum wage. Some states are higher. California is $13, Washington State is $13.50, and, you guessed it, Washington, D.C. is highest at $14. So again, how do you want the government to collect your share of supporting people without jobs because of the coronavirus shutdown? Of course, we are not being serious. The government would never, ever attach the wages of those with jobs in order to support the unemployed. But support such as that through state unemployment compensation programs and the Federal CARES Act has to be paid for somehow. Our solution in the United States has been to print more money. We call it deficit spending, and to date, it has increased the national debt to more than $25 trillion. If you have a calculator, you can determine your share of that. Sit down first. The bottom line is that the COVID-19 lockdown is unsustainable and not just in the long run. We simply cannot afford to maintain an economy on the current basis. Clearly, we have to reopen the United States. That must be done very, very carefully, but it does have to be done. An editorial. It's time to honor emergency medical service providers. These dedicated men and women perform a vital service. In Webster County and all across America, teams of dedicated professionals stand ready to render medical assistance in emergencies. For some, this is their career. For many others, it is a volunteer undertaking that is performed in addition to their normal employment. It's impossible to overstate how important emergency medical service, or EMS, personnel can be to just about any of us in a moment when knowledgeable help is needed fast. Honoring the men and women who handled this vital work is appropriate at all times, but especially so just now. That's because National EMS Week begins Sunday and continues through Saturday. In 1974, President Gerald Ford proclaimed the first National EMS Week. Now, the event is led by the National Association of Emergency Medical Technicians and the American College of Emergency Physicians. In Fort Dodge, pre-hospital emergency care is provided by the fire department. Its roster is filled with firefighters cross-trained as paramedics or EMTs, plus a handful of EMTs and paramedics who are not firefighters. The department has 5 fully equipped ambulances and medical gear is carried on all the fire trucks. On July 1st, 2018, the Fort Dodge Fire Department assumed full responsibility for the ambulance service once provided by Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center in a transition that hospital and city officials say provides outstanding care in a financially sustainable way. The hospital had provided ambulance service since 1958, when it was known as Lutheran Hospital. That service continued as the facility's name changed to Bethesda General Hospital in 1969, to Trinity Regional Hospital in 1974, and to today's Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center. The Fort Dodge Fire Department is by no means the only provider of emergency medical care in Webster County. There are volunteer EMS units in Gowrie, Dayton, Clare, and Vincent. Firefighters, deputy sheriffs, and police officers serve in a vital first responder role before the ambulances arrive. Throughout the region, there are other EMS agencies ready to assist at a moment's notice. They include ambulance services operated by Van Diest Medical Center in Webster City, Humboldt County Memorial Hospital in Humboldt, and Pocahontas Community Hospital in Pocahontas. Calhoun and Sac counties both have countywide EMS systems. The public is grateful for the service of all EMS providers, and we are as well. Building bridges. School mentors help students find their way. For most students, being successful in school is more than reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's learning how to form the social and emotional connections that will carry them to successes in life, no matter the subject. And while there's no shortage of opportunity for social time in class, some students need a different kind of connection than the ones available through their teachers and parents to bridge the gap and help them see the potential in themselves. You're there to be a friend and person they can relate to without big expectations, said Marcia Main, a retired kindergarten teacher who has been a mentor to a few kids with Bridges Mentoring Program in the Fort Dodge Community School District for close to 15 years. Main has watched her current mentee, a high school freshman who has been with her since kindergarten, grow physically and academically. The two were matched in school when the student started experiencing some rough patches at home. Her teacher recognized she could use extra support from somebody, Main said. While the idea is simple, meeting weekly for less than an hour to build rapport through fun activities, shared interests, or just talking, the effects have a monumental difference in the lives of kids both in and out of the classroom, ensuring greater chances of success. By virtue of its simplicity, it manages to take the edge off the social or emotional challenges children face growing up. Every week, their eyes meet. A smile on mentee Marcella's face lights up the room, letting Maine know that she's happy to see her. Though some children come to the program by way of referrals from concerned school staff, Director Corey Moody said the program can be beneficial for any child. The program has seen a greater need for more volunteer mentors with a growing waiting list. The connection is really building that rapport with students and adding that positive person to their life, Moody said. Some kids just need more support than others. He said the program's nature can destigmatize leaning on support structures when students need it, setting them up to know how to find help later in life when necessary. He said that mentors simply have to be people that care. Social benefits from the program not only affect behavioral and disciplinary outcomes for students, but have a correlation to better grades and attendance rates too, Moody said. When you have your social and emotional needs met, you're going to continue to do better in school, he said. Even with a wait list, he said the 20-year-old program has ambitions to become more expansive by recognizing mentees who could benefit from the program most early on and matching them to mentors in elementary school. Initiating the relationship at a younger age allows for a more accessible entry point of a new person into their lives and allows the relationship to solidify for easy transition into middle and high school. For now, the program's participants are just trying to maintain connections in the age of COVID-19, communicating through virtual means. But virtual means can't always replace the connection in person. I think there's going to be a great need in August when we come back for lots of students that need reassurance and positive supports, Moody said, hoping to recruit more mentors by then. It's definitely challenging times for everyone. Mentors draw from the support of the relationship, too. She helps me more than I'm helping her, said mentor Lauren Schnurr, a hairstylist and cosmetologist who kept boredom at bay during mandatory salon closures by doing video calls with her seventh grader, Nevaeh. Schnurr said that by talking about Nevaeh's goals, she's reminded to keep on track and stay accountable to her own goals in life. At 26, the mentor said that she's probably considered more of a big sister than a mature role model to the 15-year-old, making the connection that much more endearing with an energy they feed off of each other. Schnurr was inspired to volunteer earlier this year by memories of working at the YWCA's childcare program as a teenager. Together, they talk about friendship goals, like sticking up for yourself and being kinder to friends without getting referrals. Nevaeh is always upbeat and fun, Schnurr said. I see a lot of me in her, she said. When asked about what she missed most about school, Nevaeh said it was meeting with Schnurr. That's when the mentor knew that her listening and engagement, effortless on her part thanks to the strong connection, was having an impact. It's showing that you want to be there as well. It's not like a job, Schnurr said, recalling the moment when Nevaeh realized her mentor wasn't being paid to be there. As soon as it's safe, the pair will be making a beeline for Lomita's Mexican restaurant, their favorite. It's important for kids to have a caring adult that's a third party, not a parent or teacher, said Cheryl Trunnell, who taught third grade for 17 years at Cooper Elementary School. They're just trying to figure out who they are as a person. The consistency of being a caring adult who will hold them accountable without putting them through the ringer is why she volunteered to mentor a pair of sixth graders she knew as a teacher. They just need to know someone sees them for who they are and that they have potential, Trunnell said. It may seem like a tall order, but it's all in an hour's work each week that provides them with a happy time and a break from school, she said. As a teacher, she saw the impacts mentoring had on her students. By being the one that cares, and for some children, perhaps the only one, Trunnell said she believes her guidance serves as an inner voice for students. For one of her mentees who constantly got in trouble for swearing at school, she learned that he wouldn't swear around her because he didn't want to disappoint her. I think that's good, that you have an adult in your life you don't want to disappoint, she said. It's how it helps them avoid negative outcomes and just gets them to stop and think. While she can't force them to do the right thing, she plants seeds that grow with maturity. Mentors like her build a structure for success that doesn't feel restrictive or cumbersome. Schools could be so rigorous, so serious, that it's nice to just do something for fun, Trunnell said. I think kids need fun. Those interested in becoming a mentor to a student can email Moody at cmoody, and that's spelled C-M-O-O-D-Y, at fdschools.org. Becoming a mentor requires simple paperwork, a background check, and introductions to the program. Moody said he would like to have mentors ready to go when school starts in August. You're listening to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Friday, May 15th and Saturday, May 16th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Brent Ben Newton. Brent Ben Newton, 50, of Fort Dodge, passed away Wednesday, May 13th at Trinity Regional Medical Center. Services are pending with Loffersweiler Seaver's Funeral Home. Philip Ladley. Philip Ladley, 78, of Fort Dodge, died May 14th at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home. Arrangements have been entrusted to Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Memorials may be sent to Unity Point Hospice. Erwin F. Eilers. Erwin F. Eilers, 85, of Fort Dodge, died Tuesday, May 12th at Friendship Haven. Memorial services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, June 6th, at St. Paul Lutheran Church, 400 South 13th Street, with Reverend Kendall Meyer officiating. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the family. To view the complete obituary and leave online condolences for the family, please visit brucesfuneralhome.com. Scott Sawyer. Scott Lee Sawyer, 53, of Whiting, passed away May 8th. Survived by wife, Julia Brass Sawyer, daughters Kristen Sidwell and spouse Bryce of Whiting, and Amy Sawyer, and granddaughter Aliana of Sioux City, mother Sharon Sawyer of Humboldt, and sisters Kim Metzger and spouse Randall of Hudson, Colorado, and Nikki Rathert and spouse Ryan of Lantana, Texas, preceded in death by father Kenneth Sawyer and brother Stephen Sawyer. Betty J. Vosburgh. Betty J. Vosburgh, age 85, of Pocahontas, passed away on Wednesday, May 13th, at her home near Pocahontas. Private family funeral services will be held on Saturday, May 16th, at the Powers Funeral Home in Pocahontas, with Pastor John Mayer officiating. Burial will be at Summit Hill Cemetery in Pocahontas. There will be no visitation. Powers Funeral Home in Pocahontas is handling arrangements. For online condolences and obituary, visit powersfh.net. Billy Williams. Billy Williams, 55, of Fort Dodge, passed away Friday, May 15th, at his home. Services are pending with Loffersweiler Seaver's Funeral Home. Doris Andrews. Doris Andrews, 95, of Clarion, passed away on May 14th. Public graveside service is 2 p.m. on May 19th at Evergreen Cemetery, Clarion, with social distancing. Sandra Soma. Sandra Skeegee Soma, 82, of Belmont, passed away on May 15th. A private graveside service for family will be held at Belmont Cemetery. A celebration of life will be held later. Earl F. Pickens. Earl F. Pickens, 85, of Fort Dodge, formerly of Cherokee, passed away Monday afternoon, May 11th, at his residence in Fort Dodge. A private family graveside service will be held at the Oak Hill Cemetery in Cherokee. A public celebration of life will be held at a later date. Boothby Funeral Home of Cherokee is in charge of the arrangements. Online condolences may be left at boothbyfuneral.com. And that's spelled B-O-O-T-H-B-Y, Boothby Funeral. Mary Louise Kitty Rolfs. Mary Louise Kitty Rolfs, 90, was called home to be with our Lord on May 7th. Mary was born on May 12th at Lamar's to Frank and Trudy McGraw Lucan. She was the youngest of five and quite spunky. Her brothers gave her the nickname Kitty, based on the precocious little girl featured in the Kitty Higgins comic strip. The name stuck, as did the spunk. On June 8, 1955, Kitty married Aloysius Al Rolfs. Al was a World War II veteran, father of two, and a young widower. Decades later, in an interview with the Lamar's Daily Sentinel, Al recalled that Mary Lucan was the prettiest girl in Lamar's, and everybody called her Kitty. Kitty didn't come from a big family and had no previous experience with children. But when we married, she took care of the boys, she took care of me, and she took care of the six babies that followed. After Al married Kitty, he resumed his military career, this time in the Iowa National Guard. Over the course of his career, the family moved from Lamar's to Fort Dodge, to Boone, and to Johnston for Camp Dodge. Moving and resettling a family of 10 was not easy, but Kitty took it in stride and made dear friends in each community. She was her kids' biggest fan, attending countless baseball and football games, often clutching her rosary beads. There was always warm food on the stove and an extra plate for hungry friends. She was always folding laundry and spent many hours counseling her kids on the front porch swing. She took special delight in her grandchildren, showering them with love and providing special one-on-one time with each of them. She was the best. Kitty is survived by her children, David and spouse Kim of Gowrie, Gary and spouse Carmen of Clinton, Scott and spouse Becky of Panora, Tim and spouse Therese of Ankeny, Tom and spouse Janine of Granger, John and partner Allison Rolfing of Milwaukee, Mary of Johnston, and Joe and spouse Kathleen of Normal, Illinois. 18 grandchildren, 11 great-grandchildren, Sister Bonnie Westergaard of Lamar's, sisters-in-law Lois Wohl and Janine Schmitz, and many nieces and nephews. Kitty was preceded in death by her husband Al, her parents, sister Shirley West, brothers Lowell and Paul Lucan, and daughter-in-law Janice Hanrahan Rolfs. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, a private mass of Christian burial will be held at 9 a.m. Thursday, May 21st, at St. Mary of Nazareth Catholic Church. The service will be live-streamed on the Isles Funeral Home's website. That address is IlesCares, IlesCares.com. The service will be streamed at 8:45 a.m. Thursday. Scroll to the bottom of Kitty's obituary to join in the service. Private graveside services will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, May 22nd, at Calvary Cemetery in Lamar's. Those wishing to show their support for the family may be present at the cemetery and should remain in or at their cars. Memorial contributions can be directed to the Iowa Gold Star Museum, St. Mary of Nazareth Catholic Church, or Every Step Hospice. The family would like to thank the staff of the COVID-19 wing of Every Step Hospice for their loving care during Mom's last days, as well as the staff at Martina Place. A legend steps aside. After over 930 career wins, Sandquist will retire from coaching. There was never going to be a perfect time for Rick Sandquist to walk away from the sports he will forever love. For as much passion as he both carried and shared when it came to softball and baseball, though, Sandquist's family was always going to be his ultimate priority. The veteran coach, who gave the Fort Dodge community nearly 30 years of leadership on the diamond, officially announced his retirement on Friday. Sandquist is relinquishing his post at the head of the Iowa Central Community College softball program, which he most recently held since 2016. After almost four full decades in coaching and education, it's just time, Sandquist said. I'm not going to pretend this is easy or something I'm completely ready to give up, but I don't think that moment would necessarily ever come. I love the sport. It's who I've always been. It energized me. I lived for the game. With everything that happened this past spring due to the global pandemic, though, I started to give retirement even more serious thought. Annette, my wife, and I have four incredible children and seven amazing grandchildren. And at this point, they don't just want me around, they need me around. What more can you ask for? That just trumps everything. I'm at peace with this decision, knowing it's about being there more for my family. They are my rock. The 60-year-old Sandquist moved to Fort Dodge in 1986 after obtaining bachelor's and master's degrees from Arkansas State University and Northwest Missouri State University, respectively. His first year of coaching baseball came in the summer of 1988 under Dodger baseball legend Ed McNeil. Sandquist became the Dodgers' head coach in 1991 and held the position for 5 years, guiding Fort Dodge to state in his final campaign. He took over the Iowa Central baseball program in 1996 and helped the Tritons reach the NJCAA World Series 5 times before stepping down in 2002. The coaching bug bit Sandquist again in 2006 when he filled the Iowa Central softball vacancy. He turned the Tritons into a national contender, leading them to the school's only NJCAA tournament berth 3 years later. Sandquist left the job to become the school's athletic director in 2010, but returned to the softball diamond in 2016. He served as Iowa Central's AD through 2018 and was the softball coach for the last 5 seasons, including less than half of the year this spring before COVID-19 ended the campaign. In all, Sandquist amassed over 930 career victories as a head coach, including 425 as the Tritons softball leader and 390 on the baseball side. Coach Sandquist did a spectacular job and has represented Iowa Central the right way for 25 years, said ICCC Athletic Director Kevin Twaite, who succeeded Sandquist 2 years ago. Expectations were high and he worked hard. He treated his players fairly and built a culture. His teams respected the game, played fast, and had fun. And he just had a special knack for getting his kids to buy in. Rick made the transition from baseball to softball look effortless. I think it's pretty amazing that he succeeded the way that he did in 2 sports that look the same on the surface, but have plenty of differences. That's a testament to his knowledge, his willingness to learn and adapt, and his penchant for connecting with the student athletes. Sandquist lauded both the guidance and patience of Iowa Central during his tenure. "There's no other school like it," Sandquist said. "They've been incredibly flexible with me and always made me feel like my work here mattered. From the time then ICCC President Dr. Robert Paxton hired me before the 1996 baseball season, to current Vice President of Enrollment Management and Student Development Mr. Tom Beneke, and now President Dr. Dan Kinney, I couldn't have asked for a more supportive administration. And both athletic directors, Dennis Pilcher and Kevin Twaite, as well. It's just been a terrific experience. They were in my corner all along. I never thought of the grass being greener someplace else. It was always green here." The lack of closure from the 2020 Triton softball season will always be a bitter pill to swallow, Sandquist admitted. Iowa Central was off to a 15-4 start with a national ranking, and Sandquist could really see the team becoming something special. This group was the total package. Power, speed, defense, and the chemistry was really coming along, Sandquist said. All the pieces were there. They were fun to watch and fun to be around, but there is a higher power in charge. I really struggled when I had to tell the team I was retiring. It was emotional. But I can walk away knowing the program is in great shape with a bright future ahead. That's very important to me. I never want to leave with the cupboard bare. Assistant coaches Bo Cheban, Alex Boyce, Dale Schnetzer, and Stephen Posey are all expected to remain with the program in a capacity yet to be officially announced. I can't say enough about my staff through the years, Sandquist said. All of my former assistants through Bo and the current group. All the times recruiting, the preparation, and game day where they put it all together. Their loyalty, dedication, and support was always greatly appreciated. They made my life so much easier, and I loved every minute of it. Sandquist added he always tried to make sure all student athletes on his roster felt valued. I wanted to be fair first and foremost, said Sandquist, who also helped coach basketball in the Fort Dodge Community School District and was Iowa Central's first head bowling coach. It's impossible to treat everyone the same, but I made sure to communicate with every player I had every single day, because they were all important to the program in their own way. I'm really going to miss the relationships more than anything else, just building a team and getting to know the kids. I was maybe a little more old school, but still feel like it's the best school. No foul language allowed, a respect for faith, and trying to instill lifelong morals and values in the young men and women I coached. I hope that's what they remember about me at the end of the day. Sandquist is a native of Story City and a graduate of Southeast Polk High School. He and Annette have daughters Christina, husband Pat, Ashley, Amy, husband Eric, and son Ricky, wife Katie, all Fort Dodge Senior High graduates. "I have absolutely loved being a part of the community for so many years," Sandquist said of Fort Dodge. "This town comes together like no other, and it's inspiring. All four of my kids graduated high school here, and the friendships that our family created are second to none. There are so many good people in this town." Rick and Annette also have 7 grandchildren: Cohen, Layton, Jace, Aubrey, Nolan, Harper, and Avery. St. Edmund taps Tracy to be girls' hoop coach. CJ Tracy is ready for the next step. Tracy has been preparing for a head coaching job at St. Edmund by being involved in as many sports and filling as many roles as he could. Tracy has been a track, baseball, and football coach at the lower levels for the Gaels. Now he's about to become a head coach. The Illinois native was named St. Edmund's next girls' basketball coach this week. Tracy takes over for athletic director Steve Neuberger, who is leaving Fort Dodge to become the elementary principal in the South Hamilton district. "We opened up the job when I announced I was leaving," Neuberger said. CJ expressed interest early on. "With the COVID-19 pandemic going on, it was in the best interest of the program to get him in the position now, so if things get back to normal, he can start to work and prepare." "He was on the forefront of getting his application in. He had a great interview. We knew this was our guy." This isn't the first head coaching stop for Tracy, who was the boys' head basketball coach for 5 seasons in Aledo, Illinois. "I'm happy for the opportunity to be a head coach again," said Tracy, a 6th grade math and science teacher at St. Edmund. "I loved it when I did it before. The opportunity came when Coach Neuberger announced he was leaving, so I decided to go after it. I've taught little kids through high school kids. I'm excited for this chance." Neuberger said Tracy was the right person for the job. "The number one thing with CJ was that he was involved with a number of our athletic programs," Neuberger said. "As the athletic director, I've watched CJ and seen the quality of coach he is. He has a good understanding of what should be done at this level." Tracy takes over for a Gale program that has won only 13 games in the past 4 seasons. "My philosophy is to do what you can do with the players and the athletes you have," Tracy said. "When I was coaching JV, I told the kids we wanted to run and gun and have some fun, if it fits. One of my big words is compete. You have to compete to give yourself a chance to win." Tracy stressed that he wants to help get the program going from the bottom up. "I'm going to have my hand in every cookie jar," Tracy said. "I want to start a youth program and a youth camp. I want to meet with those coaches and talk about philosophies. I want to give them some of the drills that I learned and start building up fundamentals." Tracy understands the commitment it takes in the North Central Conference. "The NCC is physical, and being the smallest school in the conference, we need to come ready to play every night," Tracy said. "If we can take care of the basketball and play defense with the understanding of the fundamentals, it will give us a chance to win in the end." At St. Edmund, Tracy has coached middle school football and track, junior varsity baseball, JV and freshman basketball, and was the varsity assistant baseball coach. "CJ has been around the kids, and it's really important that they know him," Neuberger said. "He knows the girls, and they're familiar with him. He's not coming in from the outside where there would be a get-to-know process. He'll bring his own style to the program, and they'll know what to expect." Tracy lives in Fort Dodge with his wife, Nicole, and children, Mallory, Jed, and Beau. Local business profile: Farm Bureau Financial Services continuing to serve you. Business name: Farm Bureau Financial Services. Agents: Tim Lynch and Mark Passow. Location: 1812 Central Avenue. When was it founded? 1991. Who are the key leaders? Agents: Tim Lynch and Mark Passow. How many people does it employ? 4. What services and products do you provide? Auto, home, life, annuities, investments, health, farm and ranch, business. What are you doing differently to serve customers due to the COVID-19 pandemic? Meeting with clients over the phone using Zoom technology. Working with our customers and trying to save them money and provide good customer service. Farm Bureau is also working with customers to set up payment arrangements if necessary. Doors are still locked, but we are still here being available to people with everything going on around us. Our office hours are still 8 to 4:30 Monday through Friday. What is the biggest challenge your business has overcome recently? Limited face-to-face contact with clients and not having the normal socialization with them. What is the biggest success your business has experienced recently? We have seen a trend in people moving their business over here to have a local agent. Clients are taking advantage of lower market prices and making investments. With the good weather, planting is ahead of schedule and farmer insurance interest has picked up. Farm Bureau is a leader in farm insurance with some unique coverages that meet the new demands of today's farm and agribusiness operations. And that does it for today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Friday, May 15th, with stories from Saturday, May 16th, 2020 as well. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.